how do you make him engage? So we got to talking about a company in Klamath Falls called Dragonfly Transitions. It's 2.5 hours south of Bend, and it's in the town where the university he wants to go to is. And she says they specialize in transitioning young adults to independence, whether it's because of alcohol abuse, depression, autism spectrum disorder, whatever reason, they specialize in transitioning these young adults to independence. So long story short, it's kind of a long story, but a whole series of serendipities resulted in Ben getting into this place and me being able to pay for it for 6 months, which was my commitment. It was like, okay, I'll follow. I'm going to put my foot out, and if the path appears, I'll put it down. Oh, look, it did it again. Oh, it did it again. That's how I felt walking in. And so even though personally I'm disappointed with the level of energy Ben put into being there, and he's got till the end of this month, and then I'm done, I know this was the right thing to do because that's how the path opened. And that path's never wrong. I have my little view of how things ought to be, and I get to deal with that. And that's what I wanted to talk about with the fourth step. Is on the way here, this weekend there's a classic car show in Bend, and Ben has a 49 GMC truck. So he wanted to come home for this weekend. And I said I would. And then his little brother, who loves to do this, told me Ben didn't show up yesterday. This is the same little brother who sent me a picture of Ben standing beside a car in the parking lot at the high school with glass at his feet saying, "Ben broke a window in the parking lot." I'm like, I'm a little sister too. I know how this works. You don't get to do that to your big brother. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, for me, it's amusing having the two of them. So, I get the opportunity to exercise my program when it comes to my children, and I'm not very good at it yet at this new stage where we're transitioning from me being the active, controlling, supportive parent to me being on the sideline, hoping and wishing and praying and rooting and praying and praying, and wanting to point toward which goal is yours, except that it might not be yours. That's, for me, this is really, really where my cutting edge of my program is. So fourth step, am I controlling? Oh, yes, very, very controlling. And it's interesting to me because I do not think of myself as an anxious person. Not anxious. Go get them. I have so much anxiety about my sons. It's just awful. And for me, it shows up in that controlling. It's like, I want to know you're okay, so I'm going to call you 14 times, and then I'm going to get mad at you because you didn't have your phone with you. Because I'm right, because you agreed to have your phone with you. So I already won. So it's imperative for me to work my program, realize where my hooks are. I resent Ben for not engaging to my satisfaction in the company that I placed him with. I'm resentful of Ben because he bought a boat because their kayaks wouldn't hold him up. So he bought a boat with his food money. It's a little frustrating for me. I don't have control over that. And I can make myself crazy, and I can punish him, and I can be right. Or I can let him go and let him be. So it is the fourth step. It's the fourth step in action. It's that constant looking at what's my part. What's my part? Another piece that really trips me up lately is that I'm righteous. I know, I mean, what I'm expecting is very reasonable. If I'm going to spend many tens of thousands of dollars to send you to this place for 6 months, then you're going to engage and go get it. I didn't say that to him. Never even crossed my mind. I just assumed he would. But, you know, that was a pretty reasonable assumption. And that's a hook, those reasonable assumptions. So again, I get to go, you didn't say it out loud, so it was an assumption. You didn't communicate it. And I get to forgive myself for not knowing it, not seeing it until it wasn't met, which is how I found out I had expectations to start with. That's how I learned I have expectations, is I start to get mad that they weren't met. Oh my God. But these are so reasonable. Yes. Yes. Very reasonable. And they're not met, and you can make everybody around you miserable, or you can go cry. That's one of the things I do a lot. Just go cry, because otherwise, I'm pretty miserable to spend time around. And that's fourth step. I get to see my anxieties heightened. I get to observe that the phone is in my hand and I'm turning it off and on to see if another message came, because I don't know how to reset it. It's like, oh, still nothing there. Still nothing there. Well, maybe I need to, nope, still nothing there. I'll drive myself crazy. And I now know that that's anxiety. But I don't think of myself as anxious. So that's not something I automatically knew. I had to learn that. And I learned that from you guys, from people in OA meetings. When I first got abstinent, please bear with me. When I first got abstinent at a level that let me lose weight, when I first met Sue, my motto, and I would share it with anyone who would listen, was abstinence sucks and I'm doing it anyway. Because I knew the only way out was through. And I had no tools to deal with life other than eating. If I wasn't shoving it in my face, I didn't know how else to deal with it. And I wanted volume. Even if it was really good, I wanted volume. Just enough to take the edge off. And so when I first got abstinence to the point where I could lose weight, and that was my motto, I was mad for about 9 months. Mad. I was good with that, because mad I was comfortable with. You know, it wasn't too uncomfortable. And then mad faded out, and fear came up. Oh, that was awful. That was like the worst experience I can remember having. I remember calling an OA person who's very in touch with her feelings. She's just not like me as a person. And I called her and I said, I'm having a feeling. She said, congratulations. I said, no, this is not good. This is bad. It needs to stop. She said, what are your sensations? I said, well, I have a knot in my stomach and my hands are sweaty. Oh my God, I'm afraid. She said, I'm afraid so. I said, well, what do you do about it? She said, you sit with it. No, you don't sit with it. You make it stop. She said, well, the only way I know how to do that is eating. Is that an option? So I have to sit with it? Oh, this is awful. And it was just awful. And over time, talking to you guys, I gained some tools for dealing with it. Really, it doesn't last forever. I didn't know that. Even when something really nasty happens, I remember having a celebration. It was about a year after that. I can't remember what happened, but it really freaked me out. Something really scared me. And it took me about 24 hours to get through the fear and calm down. I thought, oh, that was only 24 hours. Wow. Okay, so fear doesn't last forever. Good to know. I'm willing to feel it because I won't die from it. Sometimes I'm willing to feel it. So learning to feel feelings was huge for me. And if I don't, I'll eat. It's that simple. You've got to be able to walk through it and sit with it. One of my experiences with sitting with fear actually happened before that. And my in-laws live in Hawaii, and I had purchased a ticket to go to Hawaii to introduce my younger son to his grandparents, my husband's parents. So I bought the ticket, and the minute I clicked buy it and finished it, I got fear. It's like, I'm afraid. Wow, this is really weird. You really know that flying is safer than driving, right? Especially to Hawaii, but it doesn't matter. Really, just get over yourself. And I'm talking myself out of this fear, and I'm having a battle with myself about this fear, and it is on me. And I would wake up, and it would be on me. And I'd take a shower, and it would be on me. And I'd be, like, putting my clothes on, it would be on me. If I got busy enough at work, it would go away. But as soon as I came up for air, like, what? So finally I did just that. I turned to it, and I said, what? And the immediate feeling I had was this sensation of relief. I'm so glad you asked. Okay. What? It's like, oh. Something's going to happen on the airplane on the way to Hawaii. I'm like, you're right. You're telling me this because you want to make me crazy until we go? You want me to cancel the trip? What? No. I said, well, I can't do anything about that. I get to accept that. That's one of the things I can't change. That's not true, says the little voice. Really? What can I do about it? Something, a problem on an airplane? You want me to go up and fly? I would probably try, knowing me. But let's be realistic. What can I do? Little voice came back. You can control how your children feel about it. Yes, I can do that. because Ben was less than 4, Patch was less than 1. Yes, they'll follow my lead. And the fear left, and I forgot about it. So we get on the plane, because I forgot about it. We're coming into Honolulu International Airport, and the plane comes back up. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing on this plane? You knew something was going to happen. Really, what are we doing here? Oh, that's right. You can control how your children feel about this. So I asked the flight attendant, what do I do about my baby? And she kind of gave me the, you know, babies aren't important look. Okay. That's not how I feel, but okay. And so I began to plan. I'll wrap a blanket around the two of us and put my hands behind my legs so it's not muscle that's holding him, but bone that's holding him. Because I kept picturing in the 70s there was a public service announcement of a woman trying to hold up a refrigerator, and that was the weight of a baby in a 40-mile-an-hour crash. I'm thinking this is a 140-mile-an-hour crash. I'm not going to be, no matter how determined I am, I'm not going to be able to hold my baby. So I'm going to block him in. And I helped Ben put a pillow between himself and his seatbelt, and he pulled it out. What's this for? I said, well, I just watched a TV news show on kids his size getting damaged by seatbelts, so I'm like, just leave that there. And Ben's like, what's going on? So I pull out the little things, the little safety thing, and I point to the airplane. I say, you know they have wheels on the bottom. He said, yeah. I said, well, sometimes the wheels don't work, because they had announced there's a warning light on our gear, and we're going to drive around till we're close to out of fuel, and then we're going to land. Oh, and it's a violation of federal law to do anything we don't tell you to do and to not do everything we tell you to do. Okay. Got it. So I had Ben set up and showed him the little wheels on the bottom of the plane and said sometimes they don't work, and then we slide on our tummy to stop. He said, oh, okay. I put that back. This is going well. And so then they began to chant, you know, brace for impact. And I tuck Patch under. First, I'm playing with Patrick. He's less than 1. He's a baby. I'm playing with Patrick, and he's giggling, which is the only sound on that plane. It was beautiful. It was the only sound on the plane, and I could feel the energy of certain people going, does she not know what's going on? No, she knows what's going on. Trust me. And so I'm playing with little Patrick, and then they began to chant brace for impact, and I tucked them down, and we landed and stopped really fast, and they towed us in. Nothing bad happened, but I learned from that there are things I can do, and fear is my ally, if I can listen. If I'm fighting with fear, if I'm trying to make the phone ring, sticking it, trying to make it ring, trying to make it send me a text, I can drive myself and everyone around me crazy. When I get to that point, and I can't make it ring, and I can't make it send me a text, usually what I need to do is cry. Because I'm trying to control things I cannot control. My anxiety is way high. I love these people. I want to protect them. I want to do what's right for them. I want them to do what I think is right for them, because I'm right. And it's all my ego being in charge. So fourth step is a very powerful opportunity for me to see my part in things and narrow it down to what I can change. So instead of doing fourth and fifth together, I'd really love to hear your experience, strength, and hope on the fourth step. As I'm sure you all know, that's the one a lot of people get stuck on. We do the waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And my opinion, one cannot grow in this program without doing the fourth through ninth steps. It's where the rubber meets the road and real change can happen. And you can't get to 6 and 7, where real change happens, sometimes very quickly, till you do 4 and 5. Because you have to, my opinion, I have to know my part before I can begin to change it. If I can't admit what my problem is or what my hang-up is, I am powerless to do anything about any of it.